It's the Rebel Room. I'm Case Kiefer alongside Mike Grimala today. In a confession, it's Monday when we typically record these, but it totally blanked my mind until it just got brought up we should do one. I think that probably speaks mostly towards my absent-mindedness, but maybe also a little bit of where the Rebels basketball team is right now. Last time we came to you 2 weeks ago, I think a lot of the goodwill we talked about on that podcast has now been squandered. Three straight losses. All close, but Valparaiso, Cincinnati, Illinois all take down UNLV. And it looks like the Rebels are scrambling going into a matchup this Saturday with BYU.
Yeah, it's taken a downturn. The last three games, they've lost all three of them, and it's been the same thing in all three games, which is they can't score. They can't score efficiently. They can't create open shots. They struggle to finish around the rim, and the three-point shooting is just, it's been bad all year, and it's doesn't look like it's getting better. So, yeah, the offense is sort of collapsing, and it's led to three straight losses. A team that we thought had some momentum, now you're back to the drawing board. You're 4-4. I know that some people expected them to, you know, have a few stumbles in non-conference play, but I don't think anyone expected them to be 4-4 at this point. So they're probably underperforming expectations now based on this three-game losing streak. So, yeah, BYU is important. You get a week off, and that they've really got to get ready for that game.
Right. We'll go back to the most recent game. Of course, Illinois. Illinois beats them 77-74 on the road. So, not exactly a terrible performance, but I think with the position the Rebels were in, you needed them to pick up a win there. And it seemed like towards the end of the game, they went on a run. They really had a chance to steal this one, but it seemed like just some miscues at the end. What do you think was the difference in the late game situation?
Well, it's the good news is that you got a breakout game from Joel Tomboy. He's a freshman, 18 points, 7 rebounds. He looked really good. And Mbaki Jiyoung, after a couple games struggling with foul trouble and little production, he bounced back with 13 points and 13 rebounds. That was the good news. The bad news was just the offense, and you saw it on the final possession, down three, a chance to tie in the final seconds, and could not get a shot off. They turned it over. Turnovers have been a huge problem all season. I think UNLV is 330-something in turnover rate in the entire country, 13 from the bottom in those rankings. They struggle to create open shots. The passing is not good, and we saw it on that final play where Amori Hardy comes down. They've got a play set up. It looked like they were trying to pop Robotham off of a screen coming up the lane where he was going to pop out to the top of the key, and Hardy was supposed to hit him, and Robotham maybe was going to let it fly from the top of the key. The screen wasn't good. Robotham wasn't open. Hardy tried to dribble, make something happen with a step back, but the defender was all over him. Hardy tries to pass it at the last second while, you know, in midair because he realizes his shot's going to get blocked, and the pass is picked off easily, so... just execution. It's a team that struggles to make three-pointers. That's a tough situation for them because they don't have shooters. And the execution was bad on all levels. The timing was off. The screen was off. And then finally, just the final decision that Hardy made to, you know, pass up the shot and try to move the ball, and it got picked off. So every level of that play broke down. It's probably a good microcosm for what's been going wrong offensively for them all year.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier it feels to you like it's been a lot of the same things every game, and I believe, unless I'm mistaken, all three of these losses, they've kind of made that late surge and had some chances, and they've just had possessions that have gotten away from them like that. I think the Cincinnati game was a game they fell into a hole early. I think they trailed the whole game, but still they did some good things at the end, but just made some similar mistakes to let that one get away as well, right?
Yeah, and this is a team that... can't do that. If UNLV puts themselves in a position where if you have to close a game with 10 perfect possessions in order to make a comeback, UNLV can't do it. They can't go 10 possessions without turning the ball over or without missing three or four shots in a row. They don't have that kind of sustained offense where they can go on that kind of run. They're more of a grinding team, and so when you're down at Cincinnati against Cincinnati, that team is hard to score against as it is. So it's hard to expect a comeback like that. Same thing against Illinois. If you put yourself down 13 in the second half, you're going to have to make a lot of shots in a row, and you're going to have to score on six straight possessions, something like that. You're going to have to get really hot in order to come back, and that is just not UNLV's game. That's not something they can do right now.
for sure. So not looking great. And, you know, the 10 possession things you said really stuck with me. It's hard for even the best teams to have 10 perfect possessions, let alone a team that's struggling.
Yeah, and I'm not saying you have to make 10 shots in a row. I'm just saying, you know, get off 10 shots
yeah,
in a row.
No turnovers. I know turnovers plague them in a couple of these games. But, I mean, it's hard for a good team to do that, let alone a team that we know is a little bit offensively limited. I guess if you're looking for some optimism, you mentioned Ray Brewer's not with us today. I hope I'm not filling his role by mispronouncing people's names, but you mentioned on Tomboy, I say it right?
Silent N, so okay. It's Joel Tomboy.
Tomboy, you mentioned his breakout against Illinois. I believe Maury Hardy had one big game in this stretch. Maybe if some of these guys that, you know, you see come up big in a game, like if they can all click together maybe and have a, you know, these breakout performances synced, maybe that's something to look for. It's just, I think it's been a case of, it doesn't seem like there's been more than one or two guys ever in a game that's really played great offensively this year.
Yeah, it's been stop and start, and that's probably the sign of a struggling offense, right? It's just sort of nothing consistent that you can really count on. It's like Hardy will have a couple good games, and then he'll fall off for a game or two, and then Jiang will have a couple games where he's in double digits, and then he'll drop back, and he'll get in foul trouble, and you don't hear from him for a week. And Tomboy will pop up once in a while with a good game. Bryce Hamilton is another freshman. He'll pop up with a double-figure game, and then they'll fade back into the back. And there's just nothing consistent to build on. And that guy we thought was going to be Shakur Justin. He was going to be the guy who was giving you 18 to 20 every night that you could count on. And even he is struggling to put points on the board and to score efficiently. So, yeah, it's hard to sync that up. There's just no consistency. You look at this BYU game coming up and you say, well, who are going to be UNLV's three leading scorers? You really don't know. Like, you don't have any idea, like, who's going to be that. You can't even tell me who's going to be their leading shot attempt guy. Like, who's going to attempt the most shots? Because Justin has had games where he's attempted three shots. Jiang has had games where he's only attempted a couple shots. You just don't know game to game where it's going to come from. And that's something that we're a quarter of the way into the season now. You probably should have a better idea, a more developed hierarchy, and, like, a better just structure where you sort of know what you're doing on offense, and UNLV just, they're not there yet.
Right, and the Saturday, or earlier last week, you wrote a story about Shakur Justin and, you know, how UNLV needs to get back to him being the centerpiece of their offense, how he really has to take on that role. It ran on the front of the Las Vegas Sun print on the Saturday of the game. I'm wondering, it seems like he was a little more assertive against Illinois, perhaps, but the results just weren't really there. Kind of update us on that story. What'd you see from Justin? And I think that's got to be kind of frustrating when you know the guy's hearing that he needs to be more assertive offensively. He needs to shoot the ball more. I think even Marvin Menzies has said he wishes he didn't pass so much. Then it feels like maybe he did it a little bit more and didn't have the results to show for it. It just seems kind of like a messy situation right now.
Yeah, he went 1 of 5 in the first half against Illinois. And some of those shots, you could tell he was getting into the lane. He wasn't getting all the way to the rim like he likes to. He was, you know, sort of couple floaters, you know, in between shots, but I'll take those if I'm a UNLV fan, because I mean, Shakur Justin, he's got a turnover rate of 26%, which is the highest on the team. He's just passing too much. He's trying to make passes in congested situations, and I'll take a shot from him. He shoots 60% in the paint. I'll take a shot from him over a pass to anyone else, you know, down there in the paint. That's, you know, you've got a 25% chance of it being a turnover. So I like the fact that he's sort of forcing shots and taking shots that might not be completely in his comfort range, but trying to make something happen. So he goes 1 of 5 in the first half. Wasn't great. Second half, he's sort of stuck with it. 3 of 6 in the second half, so he's still kind of being aggressive. 11 shots for the game. He was second on the team behind Hardy. Only 2 turnovers. So the results weren't quite there, you know, 4 of 11. We've seen Justin do much better than that. We've seen him be way more efficient than that. But I like that he wasn't making those dangerous passes, those impossible passes. Instead of having 5 turnovers, which he did the previous 3 games, he had 5 turnovers in each of those 3 games. He cut it down to 2, and 3 of those turnovers probably became extra shot attempts for him. And I think that's what you probably want going forward. I don't think he's going to magically become a great passer midseason. Stop passing, start shooting more. I think the team will be better for that.
Yeah, you certainly got me on board with that. It seems like that could be the answers. He's still going to need some production around him, of course, but I think it needs to start with him. And it's just pretty crazy, even though, you know, with the knowledge that he's passing up shots and passing a lot, to see him not as the leading scorer on this team through eight games. That's Chris Clyburn right now, averaging about a half point more per game.
Ray, if Ray was here, he would tell you how Chris Clyburn is his mother's favorite player, and exactly. Chris Clyburn is doing good things. But if Chris Clyburn is your leading scorer, then that's not going to be a good out. Like Clyburn is his number. And Chris Clyburn is shooting 40% for the season, and he's your leading scorer.
Yeah,
there are issues there.
Yeah, I wouldn't have guessed that either. But that's where we stand. We'll see how it goes. Still early in the year, but UNLV, it's looking kind of bleak. They're going to need to get back on track. In another game, they'll probably be an underdog in on Saturday at T-Mobile Arena against BYU. I guess I will be Ray Brewer for a second because I totally agree with him, and I know this is what he would be saying on here. When I first started covering UNLV, when I first moved here in the late aughts, I guess, these games were like marked on the calendar every year. Conference opponents, the fan bases couldn't stand each other. Thomas and Mack was sold out. It was crazy. Such a great environment. It doesn't seem like it's been that long, but I had looked up for something we're running in the Las Vegas Weekly this week. This is the first time they've played since they were in the conference together, I think 2011, so it's been 7 years. What's the atmosphere going to be like at the T-Mobile Arena?
Those games for UNLV that they've played at T-Mobile, and you can't judge them all the same because that was, Menzies' first year. They played Duke there, and they just got absolutely crushed. But those games are those off-site games for UNLV, in my experience, I've only been doing it for, this is my sixth season, I believe, but those off-site games are always a toss-up. You never know what kind of crowd is going to show up for those, especially because they happen to be during odd times of the season. Like they're during like the holiday break or other times, and sometimes season ticket holders are included in those games, and sometimes they're not, and sometimes they get vouchers, and you just sort of never know. And UNLV would have games at the Orleans, which is a tiny gym, and they wouldn't be able to fill that up. And they would, they've had games at the MGM Grand and the T-Mobile, and I just don't think it's going to be there. Like, I don't think the energy is going to be there, unless I'm completely underestimating the BYU connection, because I wasn't here for that. Like, that they stopped playing them before I got here, so.
I would say, hearing what you say, I'm sure you're right, but that's just not reassuring for me as a UNLV fan, if I was a UNLV fan. Maybe I'm wrong. I just feel like the BYU fan base will be there.
That might help. The UNLV's, the crowd has been completely disappointing this season. I guess understandably so, because they've had, two or three lean years in a row. But they have, at the Thomas and Mack, which is your home court, they have no home court advantage. Like, there were maybe a 2-3 minute stretch in the second half against Cincinnati where the crowd started to get loud and get into it and sort of made their presence felt. But for the most part, the other seven games this season, there's been none of that. You're basically playing neutral court games. You're playing basically closed circuit TV games. It's almost like they're playing in a, without a crowd there. That's how quiet it is. So I can't imagine going from that to all of a sudden, just because you're playing an old rival at a neutral site or a different site, that the crowd is suddenly going to show up and be loud and be vocal and make an impact. So I don't think it's going to be like that. I think it's probably going to be a true neutral court game, which is kind of sad for UNLV.
Right, yeah. Maybe I'm wrong. I think BYU will bring people. So it looks like a semi-home game for UNLV on paper. I mean, right down the street. But I wouldn't even be surprised if there's more BYU fans there, or at least more spirited BYU fans. So it might look more like a semi-home game for the Cougars. What I guess just diving more deep into that one from the actual basketball perspective, what matchup problems is BYU going to provide? What's UNLV need to be focused on this week to try to get this thing turned around?
Well, BYU, as usual, they play fast. They're like top 50 in tempo or adjusted offense, top 20 in tempo. So they really push the ball. They get into a transition. And for UNLV, that's been not their game this year. Like, they are not a good transition team. Their transition defense has been bad. They're over 1.1 points per possession allowed on defense. Their transition offense has been okay. It's not great. It's not what it was last year when UNLV wanted to play fast and they wanted their guards to run the ball up the floor and their bigs were running the court, and that's how UNLV wanted to play. They don't want that this year. It's more of a get them into the half court, slow it down, grind it out team. UNLV's strength is their half court defense. That's where they want the game to take place. So if UNLV can drag BYU into that kind of game, if you can make BYU walk it up the court, execute against the in the half court against your set defense, UNLV's got a chance, and they may be able to keep it close like they did against Cincinnati, like they did at Illinois. Keep it close, play defense, maybe make a run in the second half. But if BYU is coming out and they're pulling down rebounds and they're getting out and running and they're shooting quick threes, and UNLV can't keep up with that. If BYU hits 10, 12 three-pointers, UNLV cannot keep up with that. UNLV only makes three or four a game. That's when they'll get buried. So for Menzies, you want to slow it down and play as much in the half court as possible.
Right. It looks like it should be another close game on paper. We talk about how the rivalries, they haven't played, so it's hard not to fall off, but it's probably not the same as it was 8 or 9 years ago. I think that's in both directions. I don't think BYU is quite the power it was then either. They have been a little bit better than UNLV on the year, but it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I forgot the T-Mobile connection. I think a lot of people's minds, I think you might have even mentioned the Duke game. People remember UNLV just getting crushed by Duke 2 years ago. But last year, T-Mobile was probably the site of their best win, right? When they beat, well, arguably, I think they beat Reno Utah later. But they beat Utah, yep. And they just clobbered them. It wasn't even competitive, if I remember right.
Yeah, that was probably the peak of the Marvin Menzies era, because that UNLV team, I think, was undefeated at that point. No, they might have lost to Arizona at that point. That was after.
I'm just looking now. So, yeah, that improved them to 5-0.
Yeah, and there was people saying, ooh, top 25. Is UNLV going to be getting votes? Can they move into the 20? Because they looked really good, and then they dismantled the Utah team. Was that Utah team ranked?
I can't tell. I don't have that in front of me. But they
were expected to be like a tournament team.
And yeah, one of the better teams in the Pac-12, right.
And UNLV just dismantled them, and McCoy looked great. Justin looked good. Mooring looked good. And that sort of all came together. So, yeah, that was probably the peak of the Menzies era happened at T-Mobile Arena with that game. So, yeah, we could get, and with this team, the way that UNLV is playing right now, you could get either outcome. You could get, another. Probably it's not going to be as bad as the Duke game, but you could get, a convincing loss, or you could get if they put it all together, they could beat this BYU team. So, yeah, the range is pretty great.
Certainly. On deck after that, it looks like we're just about into conference play. Only, a week away?
Yeah, they've got the Diamond Head Classic. They'll have three games out in Hawaii, and I think that's it, right? BYU, then those
three. Yeah, then Colorado State on January 2nd. So, God, it just seems like it's flown by, but I guess you say that every year, and they will wind up. They'll be in Hawaii right around Christmas, right? Probably back right before then. Still feels a way away. This is the slower time during finals and such. So all eyes on that BYU game, or UNLV look to break a three-game losing streak. Seems like we've touched on a lot of any players we haven't mentioned quite enough. We hit Clyburn, Justin, Hardy.
The one that the fans are the most response is Noah Robotham.
Yeah, I was going to say the Robotham report.
He's the lightning rod because he's far and away the team's leader in three-point attempts, and he's shooting just poorly, really poorly. He is at currently 23% from 3-point range.
10 for 42.
Yeah, and 40. And the next closest guy is Clyburn in attempts with 31 attempts. So Robotham is shooting 25% more attempts from 3-point range than anyone else on the team, and he's shooting 23%. It's not, he was brought in and expected to shoot 40% from three, which he's done from his career. And it's not like it's some short career. He played 3 years at Akron, where he started all three seasons and played 30 games a year. So he's got 100 games of college experience as a 40% shooter, and now he can't buy one. And it's puzzling. You have to stand by him. Like, you can't bench him at this point. I don't believe. The fans want to bench and they want Hardy to start and play those minutes. But if you're Menzies, you've got to ride it out because you need that shooting. Hardy's not a shooter. Robotham is a guy who he's not making them now. But defenses at least have to respect him. He's in the scouting report as a shooter, even though he's slumping. Teams defend him out at the three-point line. He still has to take them. Eventually, you believe he's going to make them. I'm preaching, patience on that. He's going to break out eventually. He'll probably break out with an extended hot streak, too. So you're hoping for that, and when it comes, you want to ride it. So that's probably the big lightning rod right now.
Yeah, a lot of these other things, I just stand with you, as you know the team 100 times better than I do. But this is one I still, even it probably doesn't sound as good as it did 2 weeks ago when I sat here and preached, give me all your Robotham stock. But I still am just really confident in this kid. I'm with you and Menzies. I just, you know, they've lost three straight, so it's hard to say that right now. But eight games still in the grand scheme of things, not that many games. Like you said, he has 100 games at Akron where he's been a better shooter. I still think if you want to be at your most competitive, you need Noah Robotham. And I just think it's a little bit of an overreaction to already bury the kid and be calling for him to be benched. I'm still Team Robotham all the way. Maybe that'll be what takes us down, but I just feel like he's going to turn it around.
The way I look at it, their top three guys in three-point attempts are Robotham with 42, Clyburn at 31, and Hardy at 26. All those guys are under 30% for the season. Robotham's the only one that might bounce back. Like, Clyburn's not a shooter. Hardy's not a shooter. Those guys' percentages, I expect Clyburn to stay around 29%. I expect Hardy to stay around, you know, 25%, wherever he is now, 23%. Robotham's the only guy I could conceivably see going on a hot streak and ripping off, you know, 55% over the next five games or something like that and getting back in with his career norms. The other guys are performing at career norms. Robotham is underperforming. He's the one that might bounce back. So he's the one that's got to keep shooting, and he's got to – you need him. You need him in the starting lineup because he's the one guy that could make them. So that's where I stand with Noah Robotham.
Yeah, and you heard Brewer say it on this podcast, and I'm sure he's not the only one. I'm sure a lot of fans are saying it, that now the most important thing of this season is keeping that three-point streak alive. If Robotham's playing lesser minutes, I think the streak's got to be in more trouble, right? And I haven't been following. Have there been any close calls yet?
There have not been any close calls yet. But there, at some point in the season, there's probably going to be, you know, a first half where they don't make one, you know, because there are times when they only attempt, you know, four or five in a half. And it doesn't take much to go 0 for 5 from three-point range. So, yeah, at some point there's going to be a close call. Ray will be texting me while I'm covering the game. And, hey, what's going on with the streak? Are they shooting, you know? And I'll have to calm him down. But, yeah, Robotham is, you know, everyone else, they can make threes once in a while, but he's the only guy I really, even now in his slump, when he shoots them and it's a good look, I expect it to go in, and it's just not like that with the rest of the guys. So, yeah, it's definitely a struggle for sure. You can tell that Menzies, they really, really wanted to pull out of this slump, and they need him. They're just waiting for that one game where, you know, he makes 5 of 6 from 3-point range, and that sets him off. You know, they're waiting, and they're getting a little bit more desperate as it goes because they're losing these games that, if he was shooting his normal percentages, they probably win at least 2 of the last 3 that they lost. So, I mean, at some point, they're waiting.
All right, so, yeah, the last couple years, both internally in this office and I know way more externally, you got a lot of heat for being the big Jovan Mohring defender. I tried to have your back a little bit in the office to Brewer. I think there was no denying how important he was to the team, and it seems like Noah Robotham's kind of taking that mantle this year. Things like we are going to be Robotham apologists on this podcast.
It's something for a fan base that loves the three-point streak. I still don't think they quite grasp the importance of you need to threaten opposing defenses from the arc in order to make them play you honestly. Like, just if you watch some of these games that UNLV plays, the defenses, they're packed in the paint, like, so much. They've got 5 guys that are within 1 step of the paint. And if you want Justin and Jiang to be your top scorers and to dominate down there and to be good and, you know, interior passing and dunking, you need to give them space. And even if you're not making them, you've got to take him. If you kick it out to Robotham and he's open, he's got to take it. If you give it to Mohring and he comes off a screen and he's open, he's got to take it, or else defenses will stop respecting it. And even if Robotham is missing, even though he's in this slump, defenses aren't going to say, oh, he's not making them, let's not guard him out there. They still guard him because they know he can shoot it and they know he can make them. So they're going to keep guarding him. He's got to keep taking it. And he's the only guy that does provide you, only guy in the starting lineup that does give you that element of spacing. So that's where I stand. The numbers aren't there yet, but eventually he will start making. You'll see the spacing is working. And that's when UNLV will actually start scoring some points efficiently, we hope.
Right, yep, we're on the same page with that, exactly what I was trying to say. Saturday, BYU, as we mentioned numerous times, we'll try to come back to you one more time before the Christmas break, before UNLV heads out to Hawaii, and hopefully I'll even remember the Rebel Room this time. For Mike, I'm Case. As always, thanks for listening to the Rebel Room.